You are listening to the Fandom Podcast. Let your geek flag fly. New episodes Mondays on fandompodcast.com. Today's episode is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.fandompodcast.com/audible. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Welcome to the Fandom Podcast, the show that is not about comics, not about movies, and not even about Doctor Who, Supernatural, or Firefly. We are a show about all of that and much more. I am Brandon Ushio, and joining me again is Order of Merlin Third Class Wizard Nick English.
I actually just got my Order of Second Class, so I got my purple ribbon.
There's a reason that I did the Order of Third Class, though, because when you look at it, I had some fun researching this week. When you look at it, Order of the Third Class is for entertainment value, and we're here on this podcast, so I thought it would be appropriate to be Order of the Third Class.
I think that's funny.
I don't know if I was really planning on having a real answer to that.
No, I do, because the Order of Second Class is awarded generally for like recognition of services to people, and the first one is just so like I actually have done something awesome so that I was able to get that Order of Second Class contributed to society in some other way other than just having it as an entertainment value like Gilderoy Lockhart did, you know.
Yes, he's the Order of the Third Class. The Newt Scamander, who is the author of the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the movie that's coming out, he was Order of the Second Class, and then like people like Dumbledore and Remus Lupin are Order of the First Class, who are just like extremely beyond their reason brave. So
yeah, and like Cornelius Fudge, I think was.
Well, that one's rumored. That one's rumored. They never flat out say that he was awarded it.
Really?
He implies it.
Oh, I get it.
The internet goes way deep into this stuff. Like, it's amazing. As I've been reading this, there's like a whole page argument on whether or not Fudge had actually received Order of the First Class.
Presumably for his work as Minister of Magic. I get it. There we go. I just looked it up.
Presumably.
Presumably and awarded by himself, which caused controversy in the wizarding community. So whether or not he earned it or not is still up for debate.
You know, remember when we were talking about how the internet makes it possible to find your community? Holy cow, Harry Potter has this community out there. So,
well, and that's and part of that is just because JK is so good at creating a rich environment that lends to debate. I mean, that's what makes it awesome is that, you know, she's created this world and people have legitimate arguments, throughout so many different facets of it that's what makes it fun. You know, I mean, I feel the same way about Star Wars, Star Trek. I mean, if you can create a world where people can be so passionate about it and argue about topics like this, you know, good job.
We're going to jump over into our news section now. If you couldn't tell, we're going to have a Harry Potter themed discussion after our news. The top story is Jessica Jones. Holy cow. So Jessica Jones, Netflix is and Marvel have created this television series, which I actually like because it's not quite television, but it's nothing that couldn't be on television. So far, I'm only 4 episodes in. How far were you in?
I'm 4 episodes in as well. I've watched 2 episodes each night. Today is the only time I haven't been able to watch any, and I probably won't tonight. But I don't think it could be on TV. I think it would be an HBO show.
See, I was wondering about that because some of the scenes get pretty hot and steamy, but you don't see anything.
But it's so sexualized that it, I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't put it on. It would have to be definitely on cable.
Yeah. It would be like an FX kind of show, I think.
Yeah. Like maybe like Walking Dead, like AMC or something, but yeah, I don't know. I just think it's been, I mean, every single episode has been so revolved around, you know, the relationship between Luke and her, and then just the fact that, you know, the villain, can't remember his name now.
Kilgrave.
Yeah. Kilgrave. You know, it's just, I think it's an awesome show. I've loved every minute. I'm like on the edge of my seat.
Well, I think one of my favorite things about this show is that it is not superhero based. Jessica Jones is a character who could be very punchy. I mean, her superpower, the main superpower, I'm not going to give it away, because there is, if you haven't watched it yet, there's a scene where she alludes to other superpowers that she may or may not have, and I'll let you guess. Also, there's some scenes at the beginning where it makes you guess as to what her superpowers are and what her whole breadth of power is. But I'll just say this. Her superpower deals in combat mainly. And it's, you know, it's not like telekinesis or anything, or telepathic energy, anything like that. It is all in combat. It's all physical based. And she has this a couple fun scenes where you're like, what are her powers exactly? So I'm not going to give those away, but then most of the time I think that bedroom scenes are thrown in there simply for entertainment value, simply to put it on the screen. But I think that between her and Luke Cage, at least some of the bedroom scenes actually add to the story. And that's usually my biggest complaint, is like, why did you throw that in there? It does not add to the story at all. You could have cut away it here and you could have done this. They didn't show anything, but they also, you know, they didn't hide that they were in the bedroom, but they,
yeah, it wasn't skip to the drapes in the fireplace on the side. Like, I mean, you could see what they were doing.
Yes. Yes. So definitely TVMA. I almost think I've made the comparison in the past that Arrow is a TV show that was the CW made. And so it is very much a soap opera, and they slowly brought in the superhero bits. And then once people got hooked on the superhero bits, then they brought in Flash and they were able to skip the whole soap opera part of it. I think that this is the same pattern that Netflix and Marvel are using with Daredevil. They brought in this show, which it's clearly a superhero show, but there are other elements to it, and people started to like those other elements by the end of the season. And now that people are like, oh, that was awesome, now this different kind of superhero show, because she's very punchy, but is actually a very intellectual show. It is a very mental, like, mind game kind of a show, more than a punchy kind of a show.
My thought was it's Veronica Mars-esque, but with superheroes and a little bit more naughty, you know, like with sex scenes. Like, that's how I felt, because, you know, she's this independent, like, strong, you know, woman that has had this tragic things happen to her in the past, and she wants to, you know, make the world better because of it. But I love the struggle that she has on whether or not she actually wants to use her powers to help people or not. And she just kind of always gets shoved into, you need to be able to do this to help out people, you know. And she has this constant struggle where she's like, I don't want to help people. And she even has a conversation with Luke about that. She's like, I tried it and I don't like it. I don't want to be it, you know? And so I love it. I went into it not knowing anything, mainly because I just didn't read the comics. I didn't know much about her character other than that she was kind of a fling for Luke Cage. And I would kind of see her on some of the pages as I was reading other comics. But I've really enjoyed it. I can't wait to finish it.
Yeah, it's been really good. So speaking of the comics, this is based off of the comic Alias, which came out a couple of years ago, written by Brian Michael Bendis. Alias is, I didn't read it all, but I've read several of them, and it's a good book. It is a lot of fun and a lot of thought. Brian Michael Bendis that's his style of writing. If you are interested in the comic books, Comixology right now is offering 50% off of a bunch of the comics. Basically, they're $1 each. It gives you kind of her backstory, because I don't know if you know this, but she was actually on the Avengers at one point and decided, no, I'm not a hero. And she went through that thing with Kilgrave and she left. And this is her story after that, where she opens up the private eye. There's more to it than that. That was a massive oversimplification. But if you are interested in learning her backstory, Comixology, 50% off. We're not affiliated or anything like that. I just saw that and thought it was pretty neat. you could watch this show without being interested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all. It references the Avengers at one point when it talks about aliens coming down and killing people is very unlikely so far. I mean,
four episodes. Yeah, and she talks about, like, I don't want to be the patriotic or the big green guy. I think she says something along those lines, too. Where she, you know, she references him, but not by name.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
Yeah, so if you are interested in the universe, this is a great one to jump in on. You don't really have to know any of the other stuff. You do not have to watch Daredevil. I saw a lot of people asking, do I have to watch Daredevil first? You do not have to watch Daredevil.
Yeah, the only thing that it is that it's in the same place. But they haven't even referenced Daredevil yet. And I mean, they might. I don't know. But yeah, they haven't even referenced any of the stuff that was in Daredevil yet. The only thing they've referenced, as far as I've been able to catch, was the alien invasion.
So, speaking of universes, we're going to move on to our second news story. Our second news story is Star Wars, and I left that kind of vague and generalized on our outline because, well, there's a lot of Star Wars news. I have followed Nick's advice, and I have not watched any more of the trailers since the last episode that Nick was on. So, if you guys have seen anything more than that, you're ahead of me. I've been avoiding the fan theories because at this point I'm actually a little nervous that all this hype is going to, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to expect everything and they're going to deliver 90% and I'll walk away disappointed because I expected 100% and it'll still be a 90% like amazing movie, but I will have expected more. So I'm a little worried now. I have tickets for Thursday night, Friday night and Saturday. So, I'm going to see it several times regardless, but still, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I have tickets opening day. My sister was good enough to inform us that her work was renting out a theater and we could get tickets through that. And then also, they're doing it because they are donating the proceeds. Like, we bought tickets for a little bit more, but it's to help out a child that's sick, and so they're donating the proceeds to it. So I was kind of excited that I could do that and see Star Wars first day without having to give it much thought or wait in line or anything for tickets,
deal with Fandango crashing or anything like that.
I was just lucky in that, you know, because a few days before the tickets were going on sale, they said, hey, you guys can get tickets this way, and I was like, great, that's less headache I have to deal with. Yeah, I have to deal with. But yeah, I mean, I totally get it, Oosh, about, like, you know, reading the fan theories and stuff like that. I mean, it's partially why I try to stay away from it. I actually saw a really funny meme yesterday that said, so you love, what was it? It said, you love Qui-Gon Jinn, you love Darth Maul, you love Anakin Skywalker, you love pod racing, and you love seeing Yoda fight, but you hate everything about the prequel movies.
Yeah, I saw that. I made the mistake of commenting on that one.
I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, take it for what it is, and don't get mad because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, what's his name? Kylo Ren is not Luke Skywalker in disguise. You know, whatever people are thinking it is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who hate just because, oh, well, all these other people say that they hate these movies, so so they jump in. I think there are people who genuinely hate the prequels and hate the changes to the quote-unquote canon. But yeah. I also think that they make too big of a deal out of it. It's a movie. Have a little bit of fun.
Hey, but then you couldn't be a fan, right? That's what fandom's about. You got to be passionate about it.
That's true. Passion is good. Passion is good. Unreasonableness is not. There's got to be room for everybody in your fandom. So.
Alrighty.
So what I wanted to talk about in with Star Wars, though, is that Disney has come out and said that they're pretty much never going to stop making Star Wars movies. They have said pretty much that they are making a universe full of Star Wars movies. And this is the cool thing. This is kind of what I was talking about with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Once Robert Downey Jr. stops being Iron Man, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard to pull a Bond thing with Iron Man because Robert Downey Jr. does Iron Man so well, does Tony Stark so well. It's going to be hard to replace him. However, in the Star Wars movies, there's Luke's story, and there's Han's story, and there's Rogue One, which is the TIE Fighter Squadron story, and there is Boba Fett's story, and there is Darth Vader's story, and there's all these stories that you can go out and explore, because it ties back into what you were saying with J.K. Rowling, is that they've made this universe that has so many different stories that you can tell. And I, for one, am excited about that, because it kind of, Disney has shown that they can do this with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, you've got the Ant-Man heist film, which is kind of Ocean's 11-esque. You have Guardians of the Galaxy, which is like a
space
sci-fi space epic. Indiana Jones. You have Captain America Winter Soldier, which is like a spy thriller. You have Jessica Jones, which is this
mystery. Intense... It's really like a mystery. Like, you know, I get it.
Yeah. So Disney has shown that they can do that. And so I am really excited to see what they do with Star Wars, because they have so many different pieces that they can put together. And one other thing
is the Battle of the Gungans, Jar Jar Jr. I'm excited for that movie.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing, though. I was talking about this tonight with my brother-in-law. I think that the Gungans would make a great kids show. You know, as a kid, I didn't mind Jar Jar Binks at all, but I was really young. And you know what? There are much more annoying characters on television than Jar Jar was. For kids shows. And so if you're a kid, you could make a great Gungan television series. Great story of Jar Jar Binks. Yeah, the geeks on the internet would hate it, but don't make it for them. Make it for the kids as a way to introduce them into the Star Wars world. And if you really want to make the geeks happy, have all the Gungans go extinct at the end of the series.
But they actually did some pretty good episodes on Star Wars Clone Wars with Jar Jar. Like, there were a few episodes on that series that were just Jar Jar and kind of legitimizing him even a little bit more as a assistant to the senator or whatever he was, you know, where he actually, like, made a difference and, you know, helped in the Clone Wars. You know, I remember being like, oh, why was that all about Star, you know, why was that all about Jar Jar? But you know, at the same time, it was like, well, you know what? I actually like him a little bit more because they did that. So I think that it would be easy to do that. I agree with that.
It kind of goes into the conversation that we had the last time when we were talking during the Audible ad about whether you can take a stupid idea and you put it in the hands of a good writer and you can make a good story about it. So anyone who says that, you know, Jar Jar and the Gungans are dumb ideas, well, that doesn't matter. Somebody can make a good story out of that. And it sounds like in the Clone Wars, they did. I can't remember. Did the Clone Wars get knocked out of canon?
I don't know. I never found out. I consider it canon. But they had a lot of, like, stuff that was interesting, especially in the last season. Like, the last season, there's really, really cool things that they did with Yoda. And they, like, explained how he, like, left and kind of became like this even better Jedi after the Clone Wars happened, like, and he leaves and goes to Dagobah. Like, those stories are really awesome, and I think that, like, and those are, like, literally the last, like, six episodes or three, I don't remember, it's been a while, but there's some really random stuff that they do in there that I can see them saying, no, this is not canon, because of stuff they do with, like, Darth Maul and stuff that could be considered just, like, totally completely out there. I didn't want to give, like, really any spoilers about what it is if anybody wants to watch it and enjoy it. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they said no, that it's not canon. But I loved it to the point where I'm completely fine with it being canon.
Okay, that's good to know. I've heard nothing but good things about it. I've heard that it starts out very much like a kid show, and then as it grows, you're like, wait, this is not, I mean, this is, it's a kid's show, but it's not just for kids. So I think,
yeah. And the movie definitely was, like, the Star Wars movie that came out in theaters. That was the Star Wars Clone movie. Like, I rewatched that and I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely just, you know, was made for kids. But I agree. And I have only watched very few episodes of Rebels. I've wanted to, I just haven't had time.
Yeah, it's hard to find stuff because there is so much great media out there. Going on to our third story, Mockingjay Part 2, the last movie in the Hunger Games trilogy, which ended up being a quadrilogy because they split the last book in half and did two movies based out of it. That came out this week, and there was a lot of talk on it because that series started out with a lot of oomph behind it. And the first one and maybe two movies they opened up great at the box office. There were lots of money, lots of critical acclaim. We had a Hunger Games book club episode where we talked about the books and the movies, and it was a great show. But the question is, though, was it wise to divide up Mockingjay and that finale into two pieces? Because it opened up this weekend. It opened up $102.4 million debut, and it's the fifth highest of 2015, but it's the lowest in the series. So,
that's interesting.
There are people. I actually have not made it through the first half of this movie because I was like, well, it's been split up. What I'll do is I'll watch the first one through, and then I'll go see the second one in the theaters, because by that time, when the last time one came out, I got real busy and I was like, well, I'm just busy. I'll just catch it back to back. And then, so this one, but by this time, it's been years since I've seen a Hunger Games movie in the theater. And so I've lost a lot of my passion for it. But if anybody else is like me and wants to watch it before they go see it in the movie theater, on Amazon Prime, they have the Hunger Games movies. It's a part of a deal with Epic. If you have the Epic Videos On Demand movies, I believe it is on there as well. So part one opened up at $121 million.
It's on Hulu as well.
Oh, it was on Hulu as well? Okay.
Yeah, I thought I saw it on there, and I just looked it up. It is. Part one is on Hulu.
That makes sense. So, 35% decline in cash opening between Catching Fire and Mockingjay Part 2. But still, that's a lot of money. I'm going to say that since each film is averaged close to about $800 million worldwide, and they make even more profit after they sell off some rights for home entertainment, they get a couple hundred million dollars in pure profit after paying back all costs and things like that. So I'm going to say that this is just like Harry Potter splitting the last movie into two pieces. They made a lot of money off of that. The Hobbit splitting that into three pieces, they made more than one movie ticket would. And they got to tell the story that they wanted to tell. I think it was probably the right call to make on that. What do you think, Nick?
Well, the minute that they said they were going to split it into two, both me and my wife were like, well, they're definitely going to make more money because everyone's going to go see it no matter what. I mean, even if the first one is. And I actually was really surprised when I went and saw the first one where they stopped it, because I was convinced that they were going to stop it at this certain point in the book. Like, I was convinced that it was going to be like, She sees PETA, and then he attacks her, and that's where they stop the movie. Like, I was convinced that it was going to be like, that's the cliffhanger. Everyone's going to have to wait if they haven't read the books, like that was where, and they didn't do that, which I was surprised. And I was like, okay, well, it worked and that's fine. I mean, just me with my fan theories saying, oh, this is where they're going to stop it. My wife went and saw it. I was not fortunate enough to go. I had to watch the baby, but this was her review. It is so intense that I was on the edge of my seat constantly, and at the end I thought, I don't know if I want to do that again, and I don't need to see the movie again.
Wow.
Because she was just on the edge of her seat the whole time. She loved it, and she said it was a great movie, but she had so much built up anxiety afterwards that she's like, I don't know if I ever need to watch it again. Which I was surprised.
Yeah, I thinking about it, that's kind of how I felt about the book, the third book, because they have those twists and turns. And you're always like, oh, crap, when is this going to happen? Oh, because Suzanne Collins does a lot with Chekhov's gun, the theory that, you know, if you place a gun on the mantle in the first act, you have to use it by the third act. So you see these things and you're like, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, when's this going to happen? Oh, is this when this is going to happen? And it's a lot of stress. So I can only imagine the movie being a little bit more stressful than maybe reading the book.
And there was one other thing she said. She said that in the movie, she felt like both Coyne and Snow, it was a lot more obvious that they were going nuts than she felt like it was in the book. Like she felt like it wasn't as obvious that like they were completely off their rocker. Like they were still poised. And I think that it's because the way that Suzanne Collins wrote the books is it's coming from, you know, Katniss's point of view, and she's kind of naive. You know, I mean, that's kind of part of her charm is that she kind of gets thrust into this world and she doesn't really want to be a part of it, but she, you know, does it. And so it was a lot more obvious when you are the outside viewer looking at these people doing crazy stuff than it coming from the view of, you know, what is she, 15, 16? I don't remember how old she is. I know that she's young. So that was an interesting take from my wife too. I want to go see it and I will eventually, when time permits. So.
Okay. So first one's Jessica Jones. Second one's Star Wars. And Disney is planning on doing a never ending theme of Star Wars movies in all sorts of different genres. And we're really excited about that because Disney can do it. They've proven it with Marvel. And then the third one is Mockingjay Part 2 opened up, and it's going to make them some money, but it may not have been, it may not be the big gangbusters movie that the first one was. So those are our three top news stories. If you want to contribute to that, if you want to send stories our way, tweet us. We are at FandomCast on Twitter. Send us a message on Facebook, post to our page, facebook.com/fandompodcast. If you just want to know, wait, what is it exactly that they talked about? What were their sources? Head over to fandompodcast.com/flipboard, and it will take you to our Fandom Podcast Flipboard from flipboard.com. There's an app for pretty much any device out there. It's a really comfortable way to read the news, and it's where we aggregate everything. Let us know what you like. Let us know what stories you are interested in, because I will definitely listen to the fans and know which way you guys want us to go on these. All right, so now that we've covered the top news, it's time to pay the bills a little bit, and I just want to mention that this episode is brought to you by Audible. If you head over to fandompodcast.com/audible, you will be able to receive a free 30-day trial, and with that trial, you get a free credit to go pick out one of any of the 180,000 plus books that is available on audible.com. And this week I just got an email from Audible saying that all of the Harry Potter books are now available on audible.com. I absolutely love Audible. I would probably drop Hulu before I dropped Audible, because Audible, you're paying $15 a month and you get these 10 hours of entertainment, 10 hours or plus. I got a book one time that was 50 plus hours long for one credit. And actually I've gotten a couple of them that have been that long as I'm looking at my list here, but it is a great one. You can listen to an audiobook when you are drudging through all sorts of mundane activities, whether you are commuting, which pretty much anybody who listens to a podcast probably commutes, or maybe you are running on a treadmill or through your neighborhood, or you're riding a bike. Really hard to read a book during that period. Really hard to watch a movie on Netflix. But as long as you have at least one earbud in, you will be able to enjoy this cinematic masterpiece going on in your mind. Because that's one thing that Audible... I have never been disappointed by a narrator on any of my Audible books. If you are disappointed, Audible has a great return policy. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You can return the book for whatever reason. You can say, you know what, I didn't like it. And they will take it back. And they want to know why. They want to know what they can improve on. but they will give you your credit back. They will let you pick out another book absolutely free. You decide, well, no, really, I've been burned too many times, but out of this, I've got a few books that I want to keep. You cancel. Those books are yours to keep forever. You do not have to have an Audible subscription to be able to access those books. Those are yours. Really, and right now is actually probably a great time to jump into Audible, since it is the week of Thanksgiving coming up. And I love my family. I love my family a lot. But during Thanksgiving, between the holidays and my family and the in-laws' family, and then inevitably it was like, well, we're here. Let's go do Black Friday shopping. It's like a 24-hour thing. And I love my family, but sometimes you just need to escape into a good story. Audible is there for that. Just put in one earbud. Maybe they won't even notice it. You can, if your family's anything like mine, you might have kids running all over and people getting into all sorts of stuff. Great way to escape while being physically present at where you need to be. So once again, the URL is fandompodcast.com/audible. That will take you over there. Sign up. Let them know that URL lets them know that we sent you and that way we can pay for some of the hosting and some of these other things, which make it so that we can produce this podcast. Nick, last time you were on, we had a good conversation about Larry Crea, and we got some feedback on Facebook from Sarah about some of her feelings about Larry Crea and the weakness that he started out with. And you mentioned that he was going to be jumping into a high fantasy series. You've started Son of the Black Sword, right?
I have. I am about 10 hours. Not 10 hours. It's 16 hours. And I think I've probably listened to like 4 or 5. And this is what I will say. I was very confused at the very beginning. Like, the way he starts it out is a great way to start it out. But I got to the point where the story was jumping around a lot and it was in reverse order. So he starts out and there's this character and they talk about it. And then it says 18 years in the past. And then, or it says like 10 years in the past and then 18 years in the past. And then like even farther, because I was listening to it half because I was at work doing other stuff and kind of listening to it over here. I actually went back and started it over and made sure that the tracks were in the correct order because I was like, I don't think that the story is supposed to go this way. Like, you know, and then, as I started listening to it the second time, it made a lot more sense because I was paying attention. And so I don't know. I don't know how I feel. I mean, I think the character development is interesting going in reverse order. Like, this is who this awesome person is. And then this is who he was 18 years ago. And you can kind of connect it and say, okay, this is how he was. And so, like, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it so far. And I think that it's one of those stories where it's probably going to get all wrapped up at the end. And then you're like, oh, okay. You know, but you're kind of confused throughout the whole thing because there's just subtle things that if you don't catch like right away on the first time and you're like listening to it pretty intensely, that it's, you know, it can be a little bit confusing. And so that's the only criticism I have of it. The characters are awesome. The idea behind it is really cool. I like what he's done with, you know, the world. And I think it's an original idea that it's just not copying something else completely. So yeah, I've really enjoyed it so far.
That's cool. It kind of sounds like a Merlin time period, or a Merlin time reference where it just keeps jumping back. I can't imagine living my life in that order. But then,
well, you know, and it's not like written like with magic doing that. It's just, there's the main character and then he has this thing happen. And then all of a sudden the next chapter says 18 years previously. And then it's like the same character, but he's in a completely different situation and he's just younger. And you kind of find out how he became who he was. So it's really odd. Like, I mean, it was odd to me, you know, because he's this great, powerful person. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, this happened in the past and this is kind of why he's the way he is. And then he's like a little kid. And then this is kind of how he was when he was a little kid.
So it's one of those books that you have to pay a little more attention to. Not necessarily great for while you are out there trying to work, but maybe something that you can listen to on the treadmill and listen to, pay more attention on that. That's interesting. There are a lot of places he could take that. I'm thinking about it. It's an interesting concept to be able to say, this is an amazing person. 10 years ago, he was a little less amazing. 8 years before that, he was even less amazing. And as a child, he was like this, which seems to me like it's saying like maybe he's trying to help the reader say anybody can become this great kind of person, or maybe he's saying, you know, it takes these certain kind of events. I don't know. I obviously have not read the book yet. I get my credits just after Thanksgiving. So I'm going to have to find some other way to escape my loving family.
It caught me off guard because Monster Hunter is not, in my opinion, is not one that you have to like really pay attention to. Like, you can have it on in the background. And that's what I loved about it, is that that's why I called it a popcorn novel, is it's like you kind of can just kind of half listen to it. And if you really listen to it, you get a richer experience, but you're not going to be completely lost in the story if you're, you know, listening to it while painting or something like that. Because that's normally when I listen to books, is while I'm painting. And believe it or not, painting is a very, you know, grueling process. And you're thinking about a lot of things at, you know, constantly comparing and doing stuff. So sometimes you can kind of like zone out when you're listening to a show or listening to stuff. And so, you know, it's not as relaxing as people sometimes think, but, so that's why I loved it, is because I could just kind of like, oh, wait, did I miss something? Rewind. Oh, I didn't really miss a lot, but yeah, that's cooler. You know, but I still got what the story was going. But with this Son of the Black Sword, I really feel like, you know, I got to listen to it twice to get it. So,
okay, that's interesting. I have to say, I was hoping that you'd be like, yes, it's awesome. And I'd be like, yes, I'm going to get that one. Or you'd be like, no, not necessarily worth your time. And I could be like, oh, not going to get that one. You didn't help me at all,
Nick. It's definitely worth it. I would get it, but I wouldn't do it while you're Black Friday shopping. That's okay. My recommendation.
All right.
Like, definitely get it. It's awesome. I've loved it so far. Like I said, the premise and everything about it is stellar, and it, you know, it just, his creativity is really awesome in my opinion. Like, I like the way that he writes stuff and comes up with ideas. It's just kind of caught me off guard because I'm so used to the way Monster Hunter and, you know, like Grim Noir and all those ones are kind of set up, that I think he's evolving as a writer, and he's evolving, you know, in making a richer, you know, environment. And it just caught me off guard because I was like, oh, I have to pay attention to details. Dang. You know, like, so I'd recommend it so far. I mean,
it's a heavier book. It's not one of those ones that you can just put on the background and work on other stuff. It's a heavier book. You know, I'm in this struggle right now because since that email from Audible saying the Harry Potter books are available, I really want to get the Harry Potter books. And that's, there's a number of them. That's going to be half a year commitment right there.
Okay. Here's my recommendation on the Harry Potter. So me and my wife, we have a tradition that every time we go on a road trip, we listen to Harry Potter, and we started with number one and now we are on number six. Okay. We're almost done. So this has taken years because we go down and visit family, and it's like a 4-hour drive. And then like anytime we go somewhere that's going to be a lengthy period, we'll put on Harry Potter instead of the music or talk radio or whatever. There are two people that read it. Okay. One of them is Jim Dale, and he is amazing. He is awesome. Like, the way that he reads it is awesome. And both me and Lena commented on the fact that he said Voldemort instead of Voldemort, and JK just released that, or she said to everyone, well, it's actually pronounced Voldemort without the T. And both me and Lena were like, well, Jim Dale has always said it that way, so that wasn't weird to us. We already knew that. And we often wondered, is that him or is that JK saying this is how you pronounce his name? He's the person that reads the American version of the, you know, because she released him in both a British version and an American version. Stephen Fry is the person that reads it, the British versions. So we're really excited that once we get done with Harry Potter, you know, the seventh book, you know, because we'll probably get done with it like this year or maybe next year, based on how often we listen to it. We're going to start over and listen to them read by Stephen Fry and get a completely different experience.
Yeah, that's true. And Stephen Fry is not a bad reader / actor anyway. So, okay. So we have talked a lot about Harry Potter already, but why don't we jump into our main topic of Harry Potter? What I want to do is today is talk about the houses and, you know, talk about some of the comparisons and the contrasting of those houses. So in preparation for this, I went to go over to Pottermore, and that has completely changed. Nick, I know that you have spent a lot of time on Pottermore and can probably describe it better for us, but to me it almost seemed like a Harry Potter themed BuzzFeed, you know, the top five wands that you won't want to miss this year, and, you know, stuff like that. More news stories, more clickable type titles.
I haven't actually been on it since it's changed, but that's not at all what it was like before. The idea behind it was that it was a companion that you could read with the books, and then it would give you more information about what was going on in characters that JK wanted to give you and explain to you for the diehard fans, but didn't necessarily need to be in the book to further the story. So it gives you character development, cool things about why this happened or why this is something that happens in the wizarding world. And so for somebody who is a huge fan and, you know, thinks about what their Patronus would be, like me, it was a breath of fresh air because you could get more information about the books. And it was divided up into chapters. So each image, it would have this like flash image, would be a picture of what was happening during that chapter, and it would give you kind of some information about what was going on. And then it had interactive things that you could like search for. I mean, it was very mundane and kind of tedious at times because you just kind of had to like scroll around and try to see where the special things on this page were. I got to the point where I just would have a walkthrough next to me that said, okay, this is where all of the things are. And so that I could just get all of the information quickly and wouldn't have to spend hours trying to find where that little tiny, you know, fern was that I was supposed to click on or whatever. And my wife got mad at me. She's like, well, that's not the full experience. And I was like, I don't have time for the full experience. I loved it. I loved it. And every single time that I would remember about Pottermore, I would end up spending hours on it. Like hours. And then I'd be, you know, like I'd be watching a show and I'd be like, oh, I want to go and see Pottermore or something, like if they released a new book or whatever. Because she originally just did one, like half of a book. And then the other half of a book came like months later. And then the next book came months later. And then the next book, you know, like she released it slowly. It wasn't just this big max exodus of like all seven books. My wife was so excited about Pottermore, she actually got on the beta, which was there. You had to sign up for in advance to be put into the raffle, and then it was randomly drawn who was able to get onto Pottermore early. And she was lucky enough to be one of the people that got in. Early enough. And so like, I kind of had to just hover over and be like, oh, well, you know, this is really cool.
I wish, but I could be there.
You know, I wish I could be, you know, yeah. And it changed. It's actually evolved quite a bit. They've made it better. I think the interface was really lackluster at the beginning. It was really hard to navigate and wasn't very intuitive. And so over time she, you know, had, you know, the people change it. And I think it became a lot better sight after the first year or two. The thing that I always admired about it is that it literally was no profit at all. There were not any ads on it. There was not anything that was telling you you had to purchase something. Like, it legitimately was just JK being like, I want to give you guys more information. Go on this site. Like, I don't see any way that she could have made profit on it, because I didn't ever see an ad. I didn't ever see anything other than her promoting herself and saying, you know, maybe, you know, we're now releasing, like, the first thing she did was release the audiobooks on Pottermore. And I remember that specifically because she said, oh, we're going to make this grand announcement. And then, you know, the rumors started flying, like, oh, you know, now they're new books, new, you know, new Harry Potter, new blah, blah, blah. You know, and everyone was just going nuts. And then she said, I'm pleased to announce that the audiobooks are now going to be available digitally to download on Pottermore. And everyone was like, you know, like, there were a lot of people that were mad because they wanted, you know, the story of, you know, little Albus Potter, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, they were all coming up with whatever idea they could. So, that's what Pottermore was. And then I think in September, she announced that she's going to change it completely. Whether or not that was because, I kind of think that it's because of the new movie, Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now, actually, and it has the first thing on there is about Fantastic Beasts, at least as it pops up to me, and then there's a thing about Cursed Child, and then there, you know, so one of the articles was the five strangest things that happen in the Hogwarts bathroom. Let's see. So everything Flora Delacour showed us how to do life properly. Jim Kay's Harry Potter illustrations go on show in Newcastle. So it's definitely a self-promotion vehicle. You know, Christmas comes to Hogwarts. The festive season comes to Warner Brothers Studio Tour London. So it's basically like, okay, you love Harry Potter? Here, the Warner Brothers Studio is bringing their Christmas Hogwarts stuff to London. Come see it here. Or, hey, this art is on show here. Sprinkled in with some stories about, you know, why you should fall in love with a Hufflepuff. You know, things like that, which are okay. But then, and then there is also a shop on there. So there is some writing by J.K. Rowling still. There are character bios and things like that. But in the shop, you can buy the book, you can buy the audiobook, like you mentioned. Looking at the digital audiobook, if you buy all seven of them together, the price is $242.94. I'm just going to say right now, with Audible, let's do the math so I don't throw you off, $14.99 for 7 months, that comes up to be $104.93. So, you know, we're past the plug, but another reason to go to fandompodcast.com/audible and sign up, because you can save yourself $138 right there by going the Audible route. Yeah, so there is a little bit of ways to make money. Mostly, though, it is a self-promotion vehicle with some writings thrown in there. So, you know, there's stories about the Potter family, or she's got all sorts of writings giving you in-depth stuff about, like, the clothing and the sorting hat and the pensieve and stuff like that.
Well, and so I wonder if all of the information is still there that was on Pottermore before, but now it's just in a BuzzFeed. Like, you could just go there and say, okay, I want to find out more about the sorting hat. Because before, like, you would go to the chapter about the sorting hat, and then you were actually sorted into it. You would take a quiz, and they would tell you where you were sorted. And then when you did that, it would give you more information you would unlock more information about the sorting hat. So I'm wondering if now she's just saying, okay, everybody can go and get the information. We've had fun. We're probably going to do something similar later, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, but I wonder if she realized this is going to cost me a lot of money to keep doing it for free. And so now she's, you know, changing her business model. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. She, as we go on and she's making less money, less royalties from the books and the movies, she has to, she has to find ways to keep the income coming in. And so, you know, I don't begrudge her changing it. I know there were some people who were really upset about it though.
Well, and I mean, I remember everything that I was. I mean, I remember who I was sorted into. I remember my wand. You know, she didn't do, in book five, she didn't do a quiz telling you what your Patronus would be. And a lot of people were really upset about that. And then she later on said the reason why is because fifth years don't normally learn that. And only the people in, you know, Dumbledore's army learned that because Harry taught them. It wasn't something that was taught in school. And so she wasn't going to include that in, you know, because the idea was that you were going through school, you know, with Harry, and, you know, you would go buy your books and you would buy the books for each year. And, you know, you only have so much money and you had to choose which type of cauldron you were going to take. And that would, you know, change how well you did in potions class because you actually had to do physical stuff. Like, it was fun. It was just a lot of little games. Some of them were really hard and tedious because you had to, like the potions ones was hard because it would say, okay, do these actions with your mouse. And then you have to click this so many times. And then you have to wait 20 minutes for it to stew. And instead of it being, you know, the timer, and then you could come back at any time and do it. If you didn't come back in 20 minutes and do it within, you know, like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, then your potion was ruined and you had to start all over. And so it made it really hard to do potions unless you were like super dedicated. I don't think I ever successfully did a potion because I would always be like trying it out. And then it would say, come back in 20 minutes. And then I would end up doing something else and I didn't come back in time and it would be ruined. But it was fun. I mean, it was fun. Like they had like duels. So like you could challenge your friend to a duel and you each would choose a spell that you were going to do. And then you would have to move your mouse or do your keys in a, like press the keys at a certain time. And if you did it at the more precise time than your friend, then your spell was stronger. And then depending on which spell you chose, one would, you know, counteract the other. And so you would have a duel. So that was kind of cool too, but you each took your turn. So like I did that more than I did other things because I could just do it. And then 5 days later, come back and my friend had played their turn. There was a lot of really cool stuff about it. It was definitely geared towards children more than, you know, 35-year-old, you know, geek like I am. But, you know, it was cool. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, you know, so it seems to me like there would have been a lot of work in upkeeping that. And so maybe she decided to do something that was a little bit more easy to go viral. It's the stories that she's got featured there are much more interesting to share on Facebook than the nitty-gritties of potion making, I would think. So there's probably lots of reasons for the change, but you know what? It's her website. I don't think anyone can deny her that right. But so I'm looking at this. One of the things that she has written is the Sorting Hat. And, you know, so in her this, she wrote herself the, you know, she wrote, the famous Hogwarts Sorting Hat gives an account of its own genesis in a series of songs sung at the beginning of each school year. Legend has it that it once belonged to one of the four founders, Godric Gryffindor, and that it was jointly enchanted by all four founders to ensure that students would be sorted into eponymous houses, which would be selected according to each founder's particular preferences in their students. And so, yeah, it goes on a little bit more detail, a little bit more information about how it works. And then there's a section called J.K. Rowling's Thoughts. And in here, she says, "The Sorting Hat does not appear in my earliest plans for Hogwarts. I debated several different methods for sorting students because I knew from early on that there would be four houses, all with very different qualities. The first was an elaborate Heath Robinson-ish machine that did all kinds of magical things before reaching a decision, but I did not like it. It felt at once too complicated and too easy. Next, I placed four statues of the founders in the entrance hall, which came alive and selected students from the throng in front of them while the school watched. This was better, but not quite right. Finally, I wrote a list of ways in which people can be chosen. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, short straws, chosen by team captains, names out of a hat, names out of a talking hat, putting on a hat, the sorting hat." And so that's how she came up with the sorting hat right there. So I posted on Facebook a few hours before we went to record and asked you guys what house you would sort yourself into. And we got a couple of responses, which I'm glad, because I didn't give you guys a lot of time to prepare for this. But definitely go over to facebook.com/fandompodcast, like us, so that when I do throw on these spur of the moment calls for input on the show, I can have that. Austin Hussey responded with Slytherin, definitely. His wife Joanna Hussey responded with Hufflepuff for life. So you're right there. You've got a mixed marriage going on. But then, right as we were sitting down to record, we got a third response to this. And this, I don't know if Nick even saw this one, but this is from somebody named Lena English. I wonder if there's a relation there.
Hey, who is that?
I don't know. Profile picture has this weird guy standing with her.
I bet she's really cute. In fact, she just updated her profile picture going on Facebook, and she looks incredibly attractive in it. So you should go check that out.
So anyone who couldn't follow along, Lena is Nick's wife. So,
here she is.
Okay, so Lena's comment was, "There's a meme going around that of course I could not find that says something like, not all Gryffindors are brave, not all Hufflepuffs are weak, not all Slytherins are evil, and not all Ravenclaws are smart." I think that sums it up for me. In the first book, Harry makes such a big deal about the houses because at that age, with the limited information that he had, it is easier to put people in a box. But as the story goes on and he gets older and experiences more, he learns that in life, not everyone fits a label. Very profound. You married a wise woman right there.
Well, she was sorted into Ravenclaw, so that would make a lot of sense.
So you're going to put her in that box there.
Well, no, that was... It was funny because when we took the quiz, both of us said, yep, that's who we think. That's where we think we would be. And so, she's proud of it. She has a shirt that says she's from Ravenclaw, which is pretty awesome. Because I married an awesome woman, it's interesting. It's interesting. One of the things that was cool about Pottermore is they talked about each of the houses very specifically. And that's one of the things that I loved, is because people, get so obsessed with, this is how a Hufflepuff is, or, oh, this is how a Slytherin is. And so I purposely, when my wife was sorted into Ravenclaw, I was sorted into Gryffindor, and I went and made two fake people to try to get into Hufflepuff and Slytherin, and tried to answer the questions how I think that one of them would do. And I failed once. One time I failed. And then I successfully did it two other times so that I could learn more about the house, because I thought that was cool. And this was partially because I just didn't think to search on the internet that somebody probably posted it, but also just to have a little bit of fun and try to do it. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting about Slytherin is that everyone always associates it with evil. And Lena in her comments talked about that. And the specific things that they say is that Slytherin house values ambition, cunning, and resourcefulness. And it doesn't say anything about evil or you know, people who are bad at all. It just talks about that they are people who, you know, strive for greatness, whether it be in a good way or a bad way. And one of the things that it talks about specifically is that Merlin, who is considered the greatest wizard ever, is a Slytherin because he was ambitious and cunning and resourceful in the way that he learned magic. So I thought that was cool. I mean, I can go through some of these other ones. It says Gryffindor values bravery, daring, nerve, and chivalry. And anybody who knows me knows that I was taught at a very early age to be chivalrous. And that I am very daring and I have a lot of nerve. And I don't really care what people think about. And so I kind of marched to the beat of my own drum, and I made a very, you know, I made a very conscious choice to say, I am not going to try to swerve these questions one way or the other. And so in talking to my Harry Potter expert friend that I spoke of previously, when I asked her who or where she thought I would be sorted, she said Gryffindor, hands down, without any question. It says here that Hufflepuff values hard work, dedication, patience, loyalty, and fair play rather than a particular aptitude in its members. A lot of people get sad when they're sorted into Hufflepuff. I think they have a bad rap, but if you think about it,
with a name like Hufflepuff, I think, I don't know if anybody else does, but whenever I hear the name Hufflepuff, I instantly think of Pokemon and Jigglypuff. Yeah, I don't know awesome. Why, but that's that Jiggly, always is exactly.
That's so awesome.
And so I don't funny. Know why that mesh came up in my head, but you think of this pink little round Pokemon that just sings people to sleep, and you don't want that necessarily associated. It's just the name Hufflepuff. If they would have named them like the dragons, oh, everyone would want to be in that one, but.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's funny about Hufflepuff too is that their the emblem animal is a badger. Now, I actually have a very fond. Well, I have a connection to badgers in my life, so I always felt like, oh well, I want to be in Hufflepuff because they're a badger. I have studied martial arts for the majority of my life. I think I started taking karate when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And my sensei at the time gave us a spirit animal, is what he called it. And he gave me the spirit animal of the badger because he said, I look cute and cuddly, and I'm this little kid because I'm very small for my age. I'm the complete opposite of you. When I was in ninth grade, I weighed 80 pounds, you know, I mean, I was just little guy and I've always been little. So he said, you're short and cuddly, but the minute you get into the ring, you have a feistiness that is not seen by very many people your size. And so my whole life I've carried that with me. I've said, yeah, you know, I'm cute and cuddly, but you know, if you piss me off, I'm going to rip your head off. Right. And so I would say a lot of times, like, oh, I'd be okay being in Hufflepuff, you know, like because of that. I was, you know, sorted into Gryffindor, and they have a lion as their, you know, thing. But that was just a funny little personal thing about Hufflepuff. I have a lot of friends who are very proud of being in Hufflepuff, because if you look at the values, it's not something to shrug off. Hard work, you know, dedication, patience, loyalty. I think these are attributes that the majority of people will value or value in other people. And so you should not be sad if you're sorted into Hufflepuff. And JK has said that this is going to be the age of Hufflepuff. The main character in Fantastic Beasts, he's a Hufflepuff. Anyway, So Ravenclaw values intelligence, knowledge, and wit. That's verbatim.
So, I mean, you have those three different classes, but anybody can choose to be brave. And so you have basically all of the wizarding houses in that trio of Harry, Hermione, and Ron, and that is why they were able to do so many amazing things. So that, I mean, not, we don't know how their sorting went, and we don't know if they fought with the hat to be in Gryffindor, but they were all placed into Gryffindor, and they could very much embody all of those houses. And it takes that unity. You know, ambition isn't bad, hard work isn't bad, bravery isn't bad, intelligence isn't bad, but on their own, none of them are good. You put them together and you get that good, which I think is a lot of what the Harry Potter books are all about. And, you know, even, you know, and I was put into the Ravenclaw. It was so funny. I was going through it and I was like, I am honestly going to answer these questions. I'm clicking on it. And I'm like, well, I can see very clearly which one is which. And I am picking Ravenclaw for every single one of these. And so I was like, yep, Ravenclaw. That's exactly where I am going because of the things that I value. But it definitely takes the whole group of values and ideals to work together for the greater good, because they all have an important part to play.
Yeah, because Slytherin values ambition, cunning, and resourcefulness. Ravenclaw, intelligence, knowledge, wit. Hufflepuff values hard work, dedication, patience, loyalty, and fair play. And Gryffindor values bravery, daring, nerve, and chivalry. They also note famous people from each house. And I think it's kind of interesting who they choose. Some of them I don't know who they are. But like Slytherin, it says Merlin, Tom Riddle, and Dolores Umbridge. Okay. Ravenclaw, Gilderoy Lockhart, Ignacia Wildsmith, inventor of flu powder, and Garrick Ollivander, so the wand maker. Hufflepuff, I can't pronounce half of these. Hengist of Woodcroft, founder of Hogsmeade, Newt Scalamander, and Artemisa Lufkin, the first female wizard of magic. That's cool. Hufflepuff. Gryffindor, Albus Dumbledore, Harry Potter, and Celestina Warbeck. I don't know who Celestina Warbeck is. Let's find out. A popular singer known as the Singing Sorceress.
You know, this is an example right here of what I was saying earlier about how if you love Harry Potter, there is this entire universe to explore, because maybe they mentioned her one time in the books. I'm thinking, I wonder if they mentioned her during the Triwizarding thing with one of the balls or something like that, like in an offhanded comment, or if they didn't at all. This is actual like canon. Like J.K. Rowling and other people have put this compendium together of just this rich backstory that he don't really even touch on in the book.
I know. And that's what Pottermore was. I mean, and I think it will still be, but like there was a whole backstory about McGonagall and her life, and it was awesome. It was like, oh, now I know a lot more about her and why she is the way she is. And that's what I loved about it. And I hope that it still continues that. I mean, you can go on Wikipedia or, you know, HarryPotterWiki.com and get everything that was on there. But it was just a fun way to, you know, pass some time.
I still think it's a black hole for us to go delve down into and read these insane facts that are there. I think maybe what they did was made it a little bit more accessible so that you didn't have to be a huge Harry Potter nerd to want to do it. You just had to be like, oh, I've got 5 minutes. Let's go learn something about Harry Potter.
So. And it was an entertaining way to present that information without it just being an encyclopedia. Okay, so I actually found something kind of cool this week. There's somebody on Fiverr.com, F-I-V-E-R-R.com, and her name is Chris. I don't know how to say this. K-H-R-Y-S Thomas. T-H-O-M-A-S. Okay. And she has set up a service where she will create a Hogwarts acceptance letter that is personalized towards you and send it to your house. And it has all of the cool stuff on it. She also will include, what was it on here? She would include like OWLs and like actually a letter stating what you need to bring. And it is dated on when you would receive it based on your birthday. So it's not just you'll receive your letter now. It would be as if you had received it during that time. And it's just kind of a cool thing. I think the initial letter is like $5. And then if you want another one, it's $5. And if you want another page, it's $5. But I just thought it was kind of cool. I just thought I'd kind of say there's a lot of really cool stuff out there that people are willing to do. And I just thought that was really kind of cool.
Imagine how much fun that would be for an 11-year-old who loved Harry Potter as like a birthday present kind of a thing. That would be a lot of fun. It might also be a little bit hard for the parents and trying to explain that, no, Hogwarts is not really a real place. No, we are not going to try to go to Diagon Alley to go buy you these a cauldron and a wand. That would be a lot of fun.
It's really cool, you know? I mean, I just thought it was really cool. I kind of saw it just on the side of my eye fit going through, you know, something, and I clicked on it and saved it as a potential gift, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. That's something that I think would be, a lot of kids would love as a fun present, as a fun keepsake. So I think that we have gone over the houses very lightly based off of what I have seen on the internet. we could spend an hour and a half talking about each house, but we decided that we were going to give everybody a chance to hear about their house. I want to know though, what you, the listener, think about this. Which house would you sort yourself into? Or if you took the Pottermore quiz, which house were you sorted into? Are you happy with it? Do you ever think of Hufflepuff and Jigglypuff in the same sentence? I'm just throwing these out. I want to know what you guys think. Harry Potter is one of my favorite universes of all time. I'm glad that J.K. Rowling is getting around to getting some more out there. I hope they're just the same quality that the first seven books were. It's a lot of fun. Before we go, Nick, is there anything you want to plug? You've been busy doing art, I'm sure, and parenting and all that fun stuff. Anything new on that you want to plug?
Just go to my website, nickenglishart.com. Check it out. If you like anything, tell me. You know, send me a comment. You can also do that on Facebook. You can like my page, Nick English Art. Nick is spelled N-I-K. English like the language, art like the awesome thing that I do, because art is awesome. And, you know, you can follow me on Twitter, Nick English Art. I'm on Instagram, Nick English Art. Make it really easy on you.
Pretty much everywhere, Nick English Art.
Yep. Yep. And tell me how you like it. If you like my art, if you think that I'm stupid, tell me that too, because then I can take some feedback and make my art better. So yeah, Nick English Art. That's me.
Awesome. I love your art, Nick. It's a lot of fun. I like how you're starting to mash up some of the geeky stuff with some of the more classical stuff. That's something that I always find intriguing. It's a lot of fun. So, all right. Head over to nickenglishart.com.
Follow Oosh on Twitter too. He always forgets to plug himself.
Yeah, I always forget to plug myself, especially on Twitter, because I have not been so good on Twitter. If I get a lot of people following me, maybe I'll start to be better on Twitter. I post a lot of fun stuff on Facebook, on No, pretty much on Facebook. I do a bunch of groups. I'm in a Tool fandom group that's a lot of fun. I am in the Salt Lake Comic Con group a lot. Walking Dead chat. Lots of fun groups there on Facebook. But follow us on Fandom Podcast on Facebook. I try to post some fun things there every once in a while. This week, what I want you guys to do is I want you to comment. I want you to tell us which house you believe you would be in and why. Do that on the episode post that's going to be coming out here when I drop this episode. Head over to fandompodcast.com and subscribe. That way you get to hear all of the stuff. You know, it's on your device when you are ready to listen to it. Great way to do it. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/fandompodcast, and on Twitter @fandomcast, and then I am on Twitter @overgrownasian. Thanks for listening.